Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker is Kenny from the Language of the Heart Speakers Group in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ken and I'm an alcoholic. What's going on, family? Don't mind me, I'm like extremely nervous, you know, new faces, new places. This is a pretty big meeting. So fear is definitely creeping in all over the place. But, you know, I definitely have a home group. It's a Language Heart Speakers group. We meet Saturday nights in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania at 7. It's fantastic. It's an awesome group. Kind of like the same like this, man, built on love and principles and service to others, which is absolutely amazing. I have a sobriety date. It's July 27, 2007. I have a sponsor. Actually, my sponsor spoke here last week, Johnny. Yes, I'm definitely being sponsored, and I have the pleasure of sponsoring, you know, some other guys today, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. It really is. I always like to say this, man, when I get, you know, before God really, you know, takes over and starts going here. But I always like to say this because, you know, my experience, man, is my experience. And everybody has their own experience. You know what I mean? They really do. My experience might vastly differ from yours. But I think the key thing is that we find an experience. As a matter of fact, it's the only thing that is going to guarantee me any time in this program and, you know, allows me to breathe today is finding some sort of experience. So if your experience differs from mine, I apologize, but this is my experience. That's what I'm here to share with you guys. You know, I don't believe, you know, I picked up the drink when I was about 12 or 13. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't believe my alcoholism is contingent upon anything that has occurred in my life or hasn't occurred in my life. I don't believe it's because of the way I was brought up. I don't believe it's because of circumstances. I don't believe it's because of the people I hung around with. And the only reason why I say that is because I sponsor a bunch of guys today, man. And, you know, I sponsor some guys that went through some of the most horrific stuff I could ever imagine. And they're an alcoholic. And I also sponsor some guys that have been spoon-fed life. You know, they've been given everything you could possibly imagine. Yet they're an alcoholic, which tells me one thing, that my alcoholism is not contingent upon anything that has occurred or hasn't occurred in my life. And I don't know why I'm an alcoholic. You know, for the longest time, I blamed it on everything and everyone. From my parents to the people I hung around with to circumstances. And when I actually got sober and I was capable of taking an honest look at myself, I realized that I'm just an alcoholic. That's what it is. And I've been living this way because I had no other way to live. I didn't know how to do it. You know, I'm not going to lie to you guys and sit up here and say, you know, the reason why I started drinking when I was 12 or 13 is because I was completely full of selfish, self-centered fear, because I felt like I didn't belong, because, you know, I was so consumed with what you thought about me. That wasn't the case. I don't know. I was, you know, the way that I had felt from, you know, the time that I can remember up until the time I drank, I thought was absolutely normal. You know, I had no concept of, you know, being completely full of fear or, you know, worrying about what everyone else thought about me or fitting in or being out of place. I had no concept of that whatsoever. I thought that the way that I felt and the way that, you know, I was living and the way that I was carrying myself was just natural. That's how everyone else in this world felt. However, all that changed when I drank. You know, the first time that I got drunk, when I had that experience, is when I had developed that separation between being drunk and being, you know, normal. And when I wasn't drunk anymore is when I was able to identify with the fact that I'm just not normal. There's something wrong with me. Then I was saying to myself, you know, I'm constantly worrying about what you think. I just don't fit in. I don't belong. You know what I mean? And I was able to identify with a lot of the fears that I was carrying around with me, you know, probably my whole life, you know, and I made that conscious decision then that I would much rather be drunk than ever be normal again, you know, and I did everything in my power to get to that point every day. Now, I'm only 13, so, I mean, financially, it's not possible. I'm not able to just walk into a liquor store or a beer distributor and get what I need, but when it was there, I did it, and I searched diligently for it. You know, I wasn't an idiot or an ass in school, or, you know, I was very active with school. I loved it. You know, I loved it. I love sports. I played football. I played baseball. I played basketball. That was like my escape, you know, and I was very good at it, you know. But all that changed when I started drinking, you know, it really did. You know, football, going to football practice every day after school, man, didn't seem like the thing to do anymore. You know what I mean? So it started there. That's where it started for me. I quit playing sports. You know, eventually going to school got in the way of my drinking, got in the way of where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do and ultimately who I wanted to become, which was just a raving lunatic. And so I stopped going to school. It seemed like a good idea, you know, at 13, because the way my mind works, you know, is that, like, regardless of what my parents are telling me or what society tells me or what the school tells me, eventually what my probation and parole officers and, you know, other higher powers tell me how to live, I would tell myself that I know better. No matter what, I was incapable of getting any type of help from anyone until I got sober, because I just couldn't get it out of my head. You know, my ego wouldn't let me do it. My pride would not let me do it. I couldn't be helped. You know what I mean? Because I was absolutely closed-minded to everything, and I was absolutely unwilling. No doubt in my mind. So, I mean, it didn't matter the time and energy that my family spent on trying to help me or trying to get me to stop living the way I was living, or the school officials, or, you know, eventually probation and parole officers. It didn't matter because I just wasn't done. You know what I mean? I had too many ideas going on upstairs. You know, I knew way too much for my own good. You know, and it almost killed me. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Jail's not a requirement for you to get sober. You know, if you haven't made it to jail, God bless you. Really. It was a requirement for me. You know what I mean? That's just it, man. I'm like a consequence drinker. For some ungodly reason, every time I get drunk or I do something, I wake up in an institution. Every time. You know, I wake up in the back of a police car or on a hospital gurney with tubes hanging out of my chest and hanging out of my arm. Or, you know, I wake up in, like, mental institutions because I went nuts and, you know, tried killing people and myself. You know what I mean? That's just what happens every time I get drunk. Can't explain it, don't understand it, but that's just the truth of the matter. Is this really echoey? Seems like it's ringing or something. I don't know. But anyway, so, like, when I was about 14 is when I started to get in trouble with the law. From age 14 until 24, my story doesn't change much. It really doesn't. I would, you know, I'd go on my little bouts of drinking. I would go to jail. Well, I would go to a juvenile institution. I've been to just about everyone that the state of Pennsylvania has to offer. It was ridiculous. And when I was about 16, the judge up our way, and he's no longer with us, but the judge up our way, he certified me. You know, so I was 16 and I was tried as an adult and I was found guilty and I went down to county and I sat down there and, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like, you know, when I'm around, not you guys, but when I was around, like, my friends or my peers, or, you know, when I'm around people that I don't know before I got sober, I was always acting. You know, I was always playing a role. No matter what, I was always trying to be something and be someone that I wasn't, you know. And I was a tough guy and I was a hard ass and I was, like, you know, just because I was scared, you know what I mean? And I wanted you to fear me. I wanted you to scare me, you know. Or I just wanted you to stay away from me, you know, something of that nature. And, you know, so I was like this, you know, in my head, I was this tough guy and this hard ass. But when I went to jail, man, like, I'm going to be honest with you, like, you know, even when I was, like, on the block and stuff, I still acted like that. But when I was quiet myself, you know, I wasn't a tough guy, man. I was a little baby. You know what I mean? Like, I cried. You know, I cried. And when I called, I didn't call my friends, and I didn't call my boys, and I didn't call the people I was running with when I went to jail. I called my mom. That's who I called every time. And I called my mom, and I sold her this big sob story, you know? I'm a teenager, Mom. I don't belong in prison. You know, please help me. I'm going to try to, you know, I'm really going to try to live differently this time. You know, the one thing I'm very good, man, is, you know, I can manipulate absolutely every situation to work out, like, to my advantage. And that's exactly what I was doing with this, you know. And I'm selling my mom this, you know, big story, and she bought right into it, you know, because she loves me, man. My mom and my dad gave me the absolute best with what they had, you know, and they love me. You know, if they're guilty of anything, man, they're guilty of loving me too much and believing me. And they bought it, you know, and they posted my bail, and I got out. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like, you know, every fiber of my being, you know, I don't like hurting people. I don't like destroying my family's lives. I don't like breaking my mom's heart. you know, I don't like her. I just don't like living like that. Like, that's not my intention. Like, I never, when I was out there getting it in and getting all messed up, like, I didn't wake up, you know, saying to myself, I can't wait to see what kind of lives I could destroy today. That never crossed my mind. You know, so when I was sitting in prison and I'm talking to my mom, I had every intention on stopping. You know, I really did. I didn't want to live like this anymore. I didn't want to continue to hurt the people that I've been hurting my whole life. But for some ungodly reason, I am just not capable of doing that. Regardless of the fact, one thing I'm very, 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 very good at, when I go to institutions and I go to prisons and I sit in detoxes and I sit in rehabs and I'm sitting there, one thing I'm good at, man, my brain starts spinning a million miles an hour and I start coming up with a million and one different ideas on, like, what I need to do differently this time, you know? What can I change? Like, who do I have to not hang out with? Like, who do I have to separate myself from, you know? What do I need to add to my life that's just going to fix me? What do I need to remove from my life that is just going to make me okay? You know, and I would ask myself, like, if I came in with a, you know, with a girlfriend, you know, because she's obviously the problem, you know, if I could just lose her, I'll be okay. You know, or if I didn't have the girl, if I could just have that girl, you know, that's going to, when I'm walking off the beaten path, that's just going to keep me in line and hold me in place, I'll be all right. Maybe I just need to start doing more constructive things in my time. Maybe I should start going to the gym, find a good job, change my peer group, and I'll be okay. You know, and the fact of the matter is that I've you know, thought of every possible idea that you could imagine to try to make me okay. And I've exhausted every possible idea you can imagine to make me okay. And when it all ended, I wasn't okay. Every time. Every idea that I ever had completely failed. See, that's my dilemma, is that things of my own thinking and of my own ideas and from my grand intellect fail miserably every time. You know, I really have to take a look at my life up until the point that I got sober. You know, if I was good at managing my life, you guys would have a different speaker here tonight. You know, I'd be out there doing it. You know, if I knew what to do with money, if I knew what to do with a girl, if I knew what to do with a job, if I knew how to be a father, if I knew how to be a son, if I knew how to drink successfully, I would be out there doing it. I wouldn't need a program to help me do that. I wouldn't need somebody to guide me and direct me in doing it. You know, so my past is actually my best asset because I can constantly look at it and I'm ever reminded that I am just a complete mess when I am making decisions and I am managing my life. You know, it's really just that simple, you know? And, you know, which I believe is, which ties in, I'm kind of getting sidetracked here, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, which kind of ties in, like, because I knew, you know, I don't know, you know, about you guys, but I definitely know how my experience was. And, like, you know, I knew from the first time that I started drinking and from how irate my actions were and the insanity that entailed around my sickness, like, I knew that I wasn't a normal drinker. I seriously knew that I had a problem with alcohol and every other substance known to mankind. I knew that. You know what I mean? And I admitted that from the first time that I started doing it. You know, but it did nothing for me. You know, my first rehab was when I was 14, Caring Foundation. And it did nothing for me. You know, nothing. And I believe, you know, and this is just my experience, you know, I'm really not too set on the whole idea that my first step is completely pounded out when I'm out there getting it in. You know, because there's a second part of that first step that tells me I also need to admit that my whole life is unmanageable. My whole life is very big. There's a lot of things in my life. You know, so if I think that this is just about my power sense over alcohol, I'm sadly mistaken because I've stopped drinking and I've stopped doing everything else. But I didn't get better. You know what I mean? And I've just separated myself from that. Yet I continue to make decisions in all areas of my life and manage every aspect of my life except the drink and the drug. And my life did not get better. I got a lot worse. You know, and as an alcoholic, man, I'm a firm believer that as an alcoholic, we don't have a choice in treating our alcoholism. I don't have a choice in treating my alcoholism. I'm going to treat it one way or another, you know. And I like to treat it with a lot of different things. You know, I like to treat it, preferably, with alcohol. You know, but if I'm not willing to take that action, I like to treat it with other things. I like to treat it with women. You know, I like to treat it with money. I like to treat it with, like, 5 haircuts a week, like 75 pairs of shoes. You know what I mean? A nice, bright, shiny car. You know what I mean? I like to treat it with a lot of outside stuff. But eventually, you know, like I said, man, as an alcoholic, I got a couple choices. You know, I could treat it with alcohol. I could treat it with you know, all that stuff I just talked about, or I could just kill myself. You know what I mean? Those, and you know, I got to this point, man, where like eventually, you know, when I got sober, I seen that I was capable of treating with something else, but I was completely oblivious to that whatsoever. You know, I don't know why I just went off on that tangent, but so when I was like, so like from 16, I went, like I said, I went down to county, man. I got out, and nothing changed whatsoever, nothing at all. You know, except my age and my sobriety date. That's it. That's the only thing that ever changed. You know, I could change all the outside circumstances that I want, but unless the change starts to come from within, I'm a dead man walking. It's just that simple, you know? And I was never capable, man, of taking an honest look at myself because I wasn't willing to make the changes. You know what I mean? I just wasn't. Like, there are certain ideas that I didn't want to let go of. There are certain principles that I wasn't willing to let go of. There are certain areas that I wasn't willing to bring this program into. So I was incapable of grasping a hold of it. I mean, it's just really that simple, you know? And like I said, man, I had my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 14. You know, and I was under this delusion that I could just come to meetings and that I'm going to be okay. You know what I mean? Because I've been coming to meetings, like I said, since I was 14. And so that's like a good 10 years of coming to AA. And I didn't get sober until I was 24. You know, I thought maybe I'd get sober through osmosis. I thought maybe if I just hang around with sober people, I'm going to be all right. You know, if I just, you know, fellowship and like go and shoot pool and do all that kind of fun stuff, like I'm going to be all right. You know what I mean? Like, I had no idea that there's certain things that I have to do, you know, in order to achieve sobriety. I had no concept of that whatsoever. I literally thought, you know, because I didn't come into meetings and I didn't ask for help. You know, I came into a meeting, man, and I sat there and I listened, you know, I did. But I listened for all the wrong reasons. You know, I would sit there and I would just tear people apart. I would, you know, I was either way better than you or way worse than you. You know what I mean? And when I'm way better than you, like, I'm good. You can't help me. You can't. You know, I'm completely closed-minded to the idea, anything that you're even talking about. Or I would tell myself, I'm way worse than you. So whatever you're talking about can't help me. Because, you know, you didn't do what I did. You didn't go through what I went through. You did not feel how I feel. So whatever you got going on is probably not going to work for me. And this would be my thought process while I'm sitting in a meeting. So, you know, this thing is running 24/7. I'm incapable of hearing anything, you know, and I'm not asking for help. I'm not talking about nothing. You know what I mean? I'm not looking for a sponsor. I've seen the 12 steps. I have no idea what they even meant. I didn't know that you were supposed to work them. I thought it was just a reading. I really did. You know, just you go through the measures. You know what I mean? Like the serenity prayer. And that's it. I got the results of that. You know, I really did. I got the results of that. And, you know, so when I was, you know, I'm going to fast forward a little bit, man. When I was 18, I got in a little bit more trouble with the law. Actually, a lot more trouble with the law. And I went to jail for a couple of years. And, you know, I sat there for like 2 years and I was up for parole. And I remember sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, like, something seriously has to change here. Something. I don't know what it is. You know, and I start selling myself this delusion because I'm still incapable of taking a look at the fact that my problems center around alcohol and my disease. That's where my problems center around. My problems is not center around outside circumstances, but I was always looking at the outside circumstances. I would not take a look at that. So I would just say to myself, like, again, do some good stuff with your time. Only drink on the weekends. You'll be fine. You'll be okay. You know what I mean? And the worst part about it is that, like, I believe this delusional thinking. You know, I've gotten results of my thoughts and my actions from age 14 until now 18. For the last 4 years, the same circumstances and the same results have occurred. You know, so I don't know why I think it's going to be any different, but I do. I think it's going to be different this time. And I made parole, and I got out, and I lasted for about 3 weeks, and I got put back in, you know. So I had like a little 3-week furlough, and I went back, and they maxed me out. Yeah, it's nice. And it was bad. But I managed to catch like a, you know, like I said, I drink, I get arrested, I do stupid shit. And I managed to catch a little bullshit charge. So they hit me with like a year probation, you know, consecutive to my maxing out this term. So like, parole's not bad. I don't mind it because the worst you could do is pull my street time and max me out. Probation, I don't like it at all. I don't know if you guys are aware of this in the state of Pennsylvania, but you could serve all the time you want. You get violated on your probation, you get resentenced all over again. All over again. So you could do 5 years. You have a year probation, you could do another 5. you know, it's ridiculous, but I guess it's there for a reason. And so, like, I ended up doing, you know, I ended up maxing out the rest of them. I ended up maxing out the rest of that 2 years, and I had this year of probation to walk off. And I'm 22 now, and I remember, you know, they gave me a little job in the prison. I was cooking and stuff, so I was making some money in there, and I was stacking some money. I was making $40 a week, which is pretty good though. But it really is. That's the higher end of the scale. But so I managed to, you know, and I had no idea. I could see this now, and I seen this, you know, after I took a look at it with my sponsor and stuff like that. But just the preconceived ideas that I had, like the reservations that I had, because I'm in there, and I'm not, you know, I had a daughter, you know, so I'm in there for a while, 2 years. You save a little bit of money, $40 a week, through the math. And I'm hoarding money, you know what I mean? And I'm like calling my family, I need money, send it in. And I'm not spending a dime of it. You know what I mean? I'm not sending nothing home to support my child, and I'm not calling nobody. I'm saving money. You know what I mean? Why? I don't know. You know why? I have no idea. You know, and I'm telling myself that I'm going to do something right with it. Maybe get a place, or, you know, spend it on myself or something at least. You know what I mean? But I'm definitely not going to drink with it or do anything crazy like that. And they let me out, man, Friday night at 12 midnight. Well, actually, it was a good time. They let me out at 12, and I stayed sober that weekend. I really did. And, you know, I got out, and I you know, I got paroled to my mom's house. And I was so scared of doing anything, like, that I didn't leave the house, you know. And I didn't have no money, which was a fantastic thing. And my parents wouldn't give me no money. And I wasn't willing to start taking the actions that I would normally take to get what I want. You know, so I stayed sober that weekend. However, all that changed Monday morning when commissary opened up, and because I couldn't get my check at Friday night at 12, you know, a.m. So I remember going into prison for 8 a.m. Monday morning, and I'm walking up the steps, you know. And if this isn't like sickness or insanity, you know, because I know normal people definitely don't do this, you know. But as I'm walking up the steps, you know, there's, you know, prison guards here, you know, prison guards here, all types of officials over here and stuff. And I'm like having a conversation with myself, staring at the ground, like, you're going to do the right thing with this, you know, just, you know, go shop and spend money on yourself. I'm not even thinking about my kid right now or anything else, you know what I mean? See me, all about me, selfishness and self-centeredness. But I'm like, yeah, go and get yourself some, you know, get some nice clothes, do the right thing with this money. And I go in and I get the check. And I'm walking out, and I get back in the car, you know. And this is my first real identification with my powerlessness, you know, and the fact that I have absolutely no say or no control on whether or not I want to not drink. Because I'm going to tell you something right now. For the last, you know, 2 years that I was in there, I absolutely despised alcohol in every form that it comes in. I wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing whatsoever. And I got in that car, and I sat down, and I told the driver to go. And I told him to go to get some alcohol. And my hands are sweating, you know, and I'm sweating, and I'm shaking, and I don't want to do this. And I don't want to do this. Like, I am a nervous wreck. And it got to the point where I was crying. And, like, having a panic attack, because I know exactly what's going to happen. Yet I can't do it. I cannot not do it. You know? And it was driving me insane. And I remember doing it. And I remember experiencing some relief. I got twisted. But for the first time in my life, the drink had absolutely done nothing to stop the insanity in my head. This feeling of fear that I had in my chest and in my stomach did not go away. As a matter of fact, it got about 1,000 times worse. And it was very, very scary for me, because my only solution to life, which has worked so wonderfully up to this point, has now stopped working altogether. It's useless to me now. You know, but I'm still going to go through the measures, obviously, because I'm insane. But it's completely stopped working. So now I'm very homicidal, I'm very suicidal, like, I'm just a walking train wreck, you know, a bomb waiting to go off, literally. And I was, you know, I was, you know, on like a little 5-day bender, and my probation officer calls me. I remember this conversation distinctively, and he calls me up and he's like, Ken, you need to come into my office because I need to see you. See what happened when I got out? I went in and I seen intake. They gave me a piece of paper which tells me the dates I need to report. I'm okay by that because now I have a plan. You know what I mean? Now I could stop, you know, in whatever time frame I need to stop to make sure that I don't burn a hole in the bottom of the cup that you're going to give me. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm good. I'm good with those dates. I understand that you got a job to do, and so do I. You know? But my probation officer called me and threw a wrench in that plan real quick. And he calls me. He's like, Ken, you need to come into my office. And I was like, listen, Joe, I was already in, man. You know, I got this date here. It tells me when I got to see you. Like, I'll see you on the 15th. You know? And I just hung up the phone. Benito, done. And, he calls me back. He didn't like that at all. And, he calls me back. And sorry, I drink a lot of water when I'm nervous, you know? It's a nervous little twitch I got. But he calls me back. He's like, Ken, you need to get in my office immediately. Like, I did not see you. If you don't show up, I'm going to violate you. I'm like, you know, and I'm like, again, I know everything. You know, when I go to jail, I'm in a law library. Like, I'm a jailhouse lawyer. I know what you need to do with your case. I know how we can beat this one. You know what I mean? I know the ropes, you know? And I'm telling Joe, I'm like, listen, Joe, this ain't my first rodeo, bud. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, really, you know, I'm not, I know that if I report on this date, I'm not absconding. I know it. So, I mean, you can do whatever you want. When we go in front of the judge, he's going to ask, did you give a hot urine? No. Did you report? Yeah. Why is he here? You know, and I told him that. I'm like, so I'll see you then. Hung up the phone again. And he called me. No, this time he called me back and he was dead serious. He was like, Ken, I'm putting a warrant out for you right now. I could care less what you do. Show up, whatever. You know what I mean? You're going to jail. So just hope that they don't pick you up before, you know, have something on you or whatever the case may be. I'm like, what time's your office close? You know, and he told me 4:30. I'm like, all right, man, I'll see you then, you know? And so I had about 4 hours, you know, to come up with some plans on what I'm going to sell this guy, you know, what kind of line of bullshit I'm going to sell this guy. While I'm trying to introduce every, you know, known agent to mankind to clean my system out, and I walk into his office, and I go in there, man, and I go in there with my game face on, you know what I mean, because this is serious now, you know what I mean, like, I've never had the opportunity to kind of plead a case. Usually, you know, I wake up in a jail cell, or I wake up in the back of a cruiser, you know, this is some serious business that we have to attend to here. So, I go to his office, and I'm selling him everything you could possibly imagine, you know. I haven't talked to my dad in years. My dad owns a nice little construction company, and I'm like, yeah, you know, my dad's, you know, I'm starting work Monday, Joe. Fantastic. Things are going great there. Haven't seen my daughter since the day that she was born. She's about 4 now. Haven't seen the daughter. The first time I seen her was through 3 inches of glass. And I'm like, yep, I talked to my kid's mom. I'm getting my daughter on the weekend, Joe. Complete lie. Complete lie. And I'm like, things are great there. And I said, I just left restitution, man. I made a payment. Yeah, okay. Are you kidding me? If I have any money in my pocket, you're definitely not getting it. And so, like, you know, I'm completely lying all over the place, you know? And he's, like, buying into it, you know? I'm like, yeah, you know, set up the YVAD thing, you know, doing the aftercare. We're cool, man. I'm going to do it this time, buddy. And he's like, I'm thinking he's believing me, you know what I mean? I'm thinking that, like, you know, nobody else has ever said this to him, you know what I mean? And that's what my head is telling me. And so we're walking out, you know, we're walking out, and there's a beautiful door right there, which is exit sign right above it, and it seems to be glowing, like literally, you know what I mean? I can hear people singing behind it, and I'm just like in this tunnel vision, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like in the zone, you know? And he has his left arm on me, you know? And there's like the room of death over there, which is like where they urine you and then eventually, you know, cup you to a nice little wooden bench. And I'm like looking at it, you know, and I'm walking and I'm thinking I got it, you know, and then all of a sudden I feel this like hand grip up on my shoulder just a little bit tighter. And I feel him start to like kind of turn me to the left. And I'm like trying to walk, you know, straight. You know what I mean? And he just steers me in that room and I'm just like, ugh. So we get in there and he hands me the cup and, you know, I do the motion. I just give him a little sign language, you know. Just do it, man. I can't even do it. I'm going to burn a hole right through the bottom of it. And, you know, something funny happened. He struck some fear in my heart. You know, I'm not going to go into the details on what transpired in that back room. Use your imagination, but he struck some fear in me. And he gave me another chance. And I've never, ever had another chance. You know, never. And it, like, opened my eyes for a brief moment. You know, I had like this brief moment where I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm done. You know, and when I go to jail and I go to institutions, you know, I get the paper, you know, delivered to my cell every day. And the one thing, I don't read nothing in it but one thing, because I want to see how my friends are doing out there. And I'm not saying this to be a jerk or to be an ass, but this is just the absolute truth. I read the obituaries every day. I just want to see how my friends are doing out there. You know, and there were some people, man, that I had not seen in the obituaries. And you know what? I hadn't seen them in prison either. So I knew that they had been doing something different with their life. What it was, I have no idea. But I'm going to find them. You know, and I went and I found this one cat. And he was, you know, he was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He had about 2.5 years at the time. And he was running like a little sober house on Madison Street in Wilkes-Barre. So he agreed to meet with me, and there was a couple guys there. And like we sat down, and I started puking all over him and, you know, spilling my guts and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he told me one thing, man. He's like, Ken, listen, the way you used to live, you don't ever have to do it again. Ever. You know, so long as you just do a few simple things. That's it. That's all you got to do, buddy. And I was like, what is it, you know? And he told me I need to find a sponsor. You know, I need to start not only coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I need to start giving back, man. I need to start being of service to others. And I was like, whatever you want me to do, man. You know what I mean? Whatever you want me to do, I will do it. You know, and at the time, I meant it. I really did, you know. And he didn't say go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and get comfortable and cozy with somebody that you like and, you know, ask them to be your sponsor. He was like, listen, man, he's like, you see this guy over here? And there's a big man over here. He's about 450 pounds. He's a big boy. And he's like, that guy's going to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I highly doubt you're going to say no to him. And I was like, all right, you know, whatever. You know, I'll do whatever you want me to do. You know, and Joe, man, God rest his soul. He's dead. But Joey Buffalino, man, you know, he started walking me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he did the best that he could with what he had. And, you know, these guys, man, played their part. You know, he started walking me through the 12 steps. I'm seriously going to get sober in about 5 minutes. He started walking me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I'm going to meetings, you know, and I'm feeling this fire burning inside my heart. I really am. You know, I'm starting to become more free. I really am. You know, it's something's going on inside here. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it, but I'm feeling good. You know, I love it. I'm loving going to AA. I'm loving doing the hanging out thing. I'm loving the whole fellowship deal. I'm kind of digging these steps, you know what I mean? Because I don't know if the steps have something to do with the way I'm feeling, but whatever is going on right now is working really well for me. And then I got to a fourth step, and, you know, there's only one requirement, man, for a fourth step, and that's that I work it thoroughly and honestly. That's it. It doesn't have to be 47 pages long. It doesn't have to, or it can be whatever, you know what I mean? But I need to be thorough, and I need to be honest. I can't hinder nothing, hold nothing back. I cannot, you know, I just can't do it. You know, and this is where I invited the insanity of the first step back in my life. Because this is where I made a decision. You know, there is a few things that I wasn't willing to talk about. I'm definitely not putting them on paper, you know. And I didn't tell him that I left anything off, obviously, because he probably would have sat on me and tried to pull it out of me or something. But, you know what I mean? I didn't do it. So, I mean, the fifth step was pointless, you know, because I'm not getting honest with you. I'm not getting honest with myself. How am I supposed to get honest with God? You know, so what is the point of even doing six and seven? Because the sickest things that I have, I'm holding on to. I can't ask God to come in here and start cleaning house and helping me with this nonsense when I'm holding on to the deepest, darkest stuff. You know, so at that moment, man, when I made that decision on my fourth step, I literally signed my death certificate. I literally signed my one-way ticket out the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, so it was pointless again for the rest of the steps. You know, eight and nine, I can make whatever amends Joe is telling me to make, but the ones that count, the ones that are probably going to keep me sober, aren't on there. They're not there. So that little bit of fire that I had burning in my heart, when I made that decision on my fourth step, I just dumped a big bucket of water on it and put it out completely. You know, and like I said earlier, man, as an alcoholic, I'm a firm believer that we don't have a choice. We have to treat our alcoholism, you know. And I had stopped treating it with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and God. I wasn't willing to drink yet. so I'm going to start treating it with other things. And I started to treat it with women. And I started to treat it with money. And I started to treat it with clothes and haircuts and shiny things. You know, and I must have missed this paragraph when Joe was going through it with me that, you know, there's promises all over that book. There really is. There's a major one in the sexual inventory one, which guarantees me that when I continue to harm others in this nature, I'm guaranteed to drink. These are facts. We are not theorizing this. I must have missed that completely. So I'm running around and I'm not beating women up, but I'm using them like a drug. Like a drug. I'm using them to treat my alcoholism. They're making me feel good. It's the only thing that's working right now. You know, and I am so far away from God and this program, it's not even funny. You know, at any given moment, man, I'm second and inches away from killing myself and going back out there. And that day came. You know, needless to say, man, my actions, I got the results from all the actions that I was taking and the actions that I wasn't taking. You know, and I drank again. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, I don't regret it at all. You know, I don't regret, you know, I wish I wasn't being that kind of man then, but I don't regret it at all. I don't regret any bit of alcohol or anything that I put in my body. I don't regret any action that I ever took that led me up to this very moment that I'm standing here right now. Because, you know, that molded me. That, you know, ground out every idea that I ever had on what it is that I should do and what it is that I shouldn't do. You know, it really did. It smashed it into a million pieces. And these guys, man, that were trying to help me, they played their part. They carried a message of hope to me, and they showed me that this program worked. So that when my ideas were done, and I was actually ready to get sober and work a program, it was here, and it was available. And that's what brought me back into Alcoholics Anonymous this time, is the hope that this thing worked, because these guys were still here, and they had tried helping me before. You know, so I went on this sick run, and it crippled me, man. It brought me to my knees. I destroyed everything there is to destroy in my life. Everything. I had nothing. Let me just give you an idea here. I'm about 228 pounds. I went in there, I was about 150. You know what I mean? I was disgusting. You know, I went through the worst possible detox I've ever went through in my life. I was like hallucinating by like the sixth day from not sleeping. You know what I mean? I couldn't eat. I couldn't, nothing. It was the most degrading experience that I've ever went through in my life. And I managed to rack up a slew of charges. And they put me on this block because my bail was so astronomically high. They put me on this block of barway. It's called M1 and M2, which is Max 1 and Max 2. These people aren't going home. Never, ever. And it was a very humbling experience. You know, it really was, because, you know, I didn't hurt nobody that bad. I didn't kill anybody. You know, I'm going home. Whether I go home in a year or 5 or 10, eventually I'm going to make it home. You know, these guys, no matter how sorry they are or how much they wanted to change, they will never have the opportunity that I'm going to have at living life again, at doing this. They'll never have it. You know, and I sat down, man, with some of these men, and I talked to them, you know, because it was, like I said, it was a very humbling experience, because they wholeheartedly were sorry. They didn't want to be the person that they were. They had no other way to live, and they'll never be able to change it. You know, and it made me feel like this big. You know, and that's exactly what I needed to do. I needed to be a little piss on it. I needed to be a little ant, you know, to even begin to start to grow, not only in life, but especially in this program. You know, it humbled me, man. It really did, you know. And I started to, you know, I started to take actions, you know, while I was in prison concerning Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the beauty of it is that God places all of his agents all over the place. You know, and there's a CO man who just happened to be one of us. You know, and he would come in my cell and we would talk. And he would bring me literature. He brought me a big book. He brought me a 24-hour-a-day book. Like, it was just ridiculous how things started to work and how effortless it was. You know, and I started to get honest with myself. I started to get honest with others. I especially started to get honest with my past actions. And I got the results of that. I really did. It's insane how it worked out. Thank you, sir. It's insane how it worked out. I had about a year in, and I don't know if you want to call it an act of God or what you want to do, but I had about a year in, and my arresting officer on about 8 of my cases got arrested and fired and all that crazy stuff. So, like, you know, I'm really probably shouldn't even be here right now. You know what I mean? But I remember telling my attorney, she was like, we could blow this. Thank you, sir. She's like, we could blow this open, this, that, and the third. And I told her one thing and one thing alone. I did it, though. I did it. You know what I mean? Regardless of the fact I did it, I have to answer for it some way, shape, or form. You know? And I went to court and I said that to the judge. And, he gave me time served and gave me 4 additional months and put me on work release. And it was ridiculous. I should have been upstate for like 5 years. And I went to work release and I didn't waste no time. You know, they granted me outside AA meetings. You know, and I started going AA, man, and I found myself, for the first time in my life, I absolutely knew with every fiber of my being that my life literally hanged in the balance from every action that I am going to take from this moment on. You know, the next decision that I make, the next idea that I run out might be the very last one that I ever have. So I better make sure that I'm taking the right actions and putting my feet in the right direction. And that's exactly what transpired. You know, I went to AA, man, and I went there for one reason and one reason alone. You know, I have a lot of friends today, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't come here to meet friends, and I didn't come here to, hang out or do any of that stuff. I came here because my life needed to be saved, and I needed to know how to live, and I had no concept on how to do that. That's why I came here, because I was going to die. You know, I don't know if I would have died, but I would have killed myself sooner or later. I cannot go on living the way that I've been living. You know, and I came into this, man, with a vengeance and a purpose to live. You know, and I found a sponsor, man, that, he was just had this energy and this aura about him. He was a beautiful human being. You know, and it helped a lot that I knew him when he was out there. And he was twisted. He was a sick dude, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, a couple years later, he's completely transformed. Completely different person. I mean, I could say whatever I want to him, and he's just not getting mad. You know, he's nothing. It was like it was crazy. And not only did he speak it, because that's what drew me to him first when I heard him speak. You know, but he lived it. You know, because anybody, man, I could come up here and share whatever I want for an hour. But none of that really matters. How am I living the other 23 hours out of the day? That's how I picked my sponsor. You know, I watched him. I watched how he's living the other 23 hours out of the day. How are you taking everything that AA is offering you and applying it to every area of your life? How are you doing that? Can you show me? And that's exactly what he did, man. He didn't just talk this, man. That's the thing, man. He showed me how to do this. He showed me a better way to live. You know, we sat down, man, and we went through the measures. We went through the ropes. He walked me through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He walked me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I started to feel this thing, man. Like there was nothing, for the first time in my life, my primary purpose, because I believe the only thing that I have ever been looking for in my whole life is a purpose. Yeah, I've been searching diligently for that purpose. And I found that this time in Alcoholics Anonymous, my primary purpose was to get sober and stay sober. I wasn't sweating no girls. I wasn't worrying about a job. I obviously worked because you need money to survive. But that was not, I realized this is not a source of my happiness, that these things are not going to keep me sober. That my primary purpose needs to be focused on God and my sobriety. That's it. And that is exactly what I did. And it was amazing how everything else fell in like it was nothing. I didn't even have to get my little hands in there and rearrange everything to get it to work out the way I wanted to. It naturally happened. And all I did was keep my primary purpose and my primary focus on what I needed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when he outlined my 4th step for me, there was no hesitation on it. Like when he outlined it for me, I wasn't like, I'd like to go shoot some pool or hang out with my buddies. Of course I wanted to do that. But I didn't. You know, because I knew what had transpired earlier from my past experience. Again, my past experience is my best asset. It will tell me what it is I need to do every time and what it is that I shouldn't do. You know, and I knew that I couldn't mess around with this thing. You know, I remember, man, I had to take a double bus, like a double connector, to work. You know, so I would leave, I would leave the jail at like 5 in the morning and I get to work for 7. And I'm on this bus and I'm writing. That's what I'm doing. You know, when I get my lunch at work, I would eat like an animal in 5 minutes and spend the other 20 or 25 writing. And I would write on the way back. You know, and the sick part about it is, because obviously I needed some time to do 5, 6, and 7. You know, I'm not going to be doing it through the glass, although we could have. I'm sure he would have been willing to do it. I remember going in, and I asked the lieutenant at the prison. I was like, listen, is there any possible way that, like, I could not go to a meeting tonight and, like, go out with my sponsors so we can take care of this? You know, and he was like, how long do you need, you know? And I told him, and, like, he was like, why don't you do it on a weekend or something, you know? So I got permission from the prison to leave jail, you know, on the weekend and go and do step work with my sponsor for a couple hours. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing how effortless everything is and how it unfolds when you're riding the river instead of trying to row against it. You know what I mean? It's just absolutely amazing. And you know, when we did my fifth step, man, I don't know about you guys, I didn't get a lot of relief from it. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a big piece of humble pie to swallow all at once. I didn't like the fact that no matter what kind of justification I threw at my sponsor for my absurd actions and ideas and principles that I had been living by my whole life, when he just smashed it out by reminding me just how much of a selfish, self-centered person I am, and how much of an idiot, and how delusional my thinking is when it concerns, you know, myself and others. You know, I didn't enjoy it too much. But it had to be done. You know, it had to be done. You know, I got a lot of relief in 6 and 7. I really did. Those two steps are just the most beautiful steps, I believe. You know, it was absolutely amazing. You know, getting on my knees. And I can't even describe the feeling that I had when I was down there and I was talking to God and I was just inviting Him into every part of my sickness and my madness, you know, and going through the measures and doing this. You know, the intense desire to live was there. You know what I mean? And it was just coming. It was coming. And the beautiful thing about it, man, is that in 4 and 5, I got to take a really hard look at the person I had been. You know, in steps 8 and 9, man, I get to really take a look at the person I'm trying not to be and ultimately who I want to become. You know what I mean? And the beautiful thing about it, man, I mean, I'm going to be making amends for the rest of my life. I really am. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, you know. There's a lot of stuff out there that I did that's, you know, I'm going to be paying these people money, their money back for a very long time. And, but that's okay. I don't care. It's their money anyway. You know what I mean? It was never mine to begin with. You know, and the beauty of it is that I get to experience the results from taking these actions. And with every amend that I take, and with every right thing and just thing that I do from this moment on, I get more freer. You know, the bondage of self is released just a little bit more. You know, and I grow a little bit closer to God, and the person I'm trying to ultimately become starts to get there a little bit more. You know, and it's an absolute miracle. It really is. You know, and I'm going to be honest with you guys too. I mean, obviously, you know, I fail miserably. I hate even saying it, you know what I mean? But I'm a human being, and I'm an alcoholic, and, like, you know, I'm often very delusional, especially when it comes to self. So, like, there's a lot of times, man, where I miss a lot of things in a 10th step. You know, I really do. I'm not always, you know, I try to be as effective as possible, and I try to watch out for my selfishness and self-centeredness and my fears and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when I harm people, I try to fix it immediately. I try, but I fail all the time, you know? I mean, you know, for example, I mean, you know, Navy kind of knows about this. I mean, just, you know, just the other day, man, I wasn't too centered, and I got the results from that, you know, and so did a couple other people, you know. And it sucks, man. It sucks. See, I don't like making new amends. I really don't enjoy it too much. You know what I mean? It's not the best feeling in the world going up because I have no excuses for any of my actions today. I am not drinking anymore. I'm not living the way that I used to live. So when I go up and I have to admit to another human being where it is that I just screwed everything up at and how I'm going to try to do this differently, it's very humbling, you know? It really is. But it's obviously there for a reason, man, to remind me that I am still very human, that I really, really need this program. You know what I mean? I think the longer that I stay sober, the stupider I get, and the more I realize just how sick I really am. Truly. You know what I mean? Like, when I came into this thing, man, flying high off a year, you know, I thought I was untouchable. In 2 and 3, man, I realized that, like, I really, really need this program. You know what I mean? Because I'm a sick individual. You know what I mean? And I just need a lot of help. you know. And the beauty of it is that I get to get that man in 10 and 11. I really do, you know. If I'm not taking a, you know, if I'm not constantly looking at myself and I'm failing to enlarge my spiritual life, like I'm a dead man walking. Like I really am, you know. So I have to be on point there when it comes to them, because these are the steps, man, that are going to allow me to grow and become more effective in my life and in practicing these principles and obviously in my relationship with God. You know, and I'm going to be honest, man. I mean, the beauty of the 12 steps, that, you know, it says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Major promise right there. The beauty of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is that they don't care what your belief is or what your opinions are or, you know, how you've been living up to this very moment, you know. As long as I come into this thing, man, and I'm open-minded to some change. You know, I'm capable of getting honest with myself, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You know, the byproduct of working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I get to have a spiritual awakening. Upon a spiritual awakening, my alcohol obsession is removed permanently. It's gone. So long as I stay fit, in fit spiritual condition. You know, the book is very clear, man. And I don't like quoting a book, but I just have to do this. You know, it says, you know, truly, I mean, obviously my primary purpose today is to help others and to help other alcoholics and you know, enhance my relationship with God. It really is. You know, but, you know, and when I'm going through my madness and my sickness and my insanity, there's nothing more that is going to guarantee my immunity from a drink than working one-on-one with someone. But there's three major words right before that, which says, when all else fails, which tells me that, like, I really need to make sure that my condition is good, that I'm treating my condition, because I cannot transmit something that I do not have. You know, and if my happiness is solely based upon, if I'm only happy when I'm helping another drunk, I need to take a look at that. You know, and that was where I was at for a while, from like year one to like two. I was only happy when I was helping other drunks. And I was a miserable train wreck the other time because I wasn't taking an inventory of myself and I was failing to enlarge my spiritual life. That is why. You know, so I mean, it's beautiful, man. I mean, I try my hardest and I try my best to carry this message wherever I go. I really do, you know, and I try to practice these principles everywhere I go. I fail miserably. You know, I'm a rookie, man. I'm a rookie. I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why I have a support group. That's why I have Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. And that's why I have a loving, dependent relationship with God. You know, truly. You know, I'm going to wrap it up with this, man. You know, and Dave Perry says it best. And I don't like quoting people, but it doesn't really matter because this isn't his material to begin with. So, but this program, man, isn't for people who need it. Get it. It really isn't, because I believe the world needs it. Yeah, and this program is not for people who want to get it. Because I believe all of you want it. I've wanted it since I was 14. This is simply a program of people that do it, get it. If you want the results, you will take whatever actions you need to take to get them. It's just that simple. Thank you.